Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about warming centers for people experiencing homelessness, events in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and an update on the glaciers of Glacier National Park. It's Friday, January 17th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. The largest school district in Montana plans to cut up to 40 full-time employees to make up for a more than $4 million budget deficit. I found out more. Billings Public School District administrators are recommending cuts aimed at reading and math intervention programs, library programs, gifted and talented programs, music, general education, support staff, and administrative positions. Rachel Shilreff is president of the Billings Education Association, a teachers union representing almost 1,200 teachers employed by Billings Public Schools.
Because the recommendations for cuts just came out last week, we're looking at any and all possibilities, and we're discussing those with the district, and they're open to our input. Right now, we haven't identified other means of making up those budget shortfalls.
Staff cuts would lower the deficit by $2.6 million. The rest of the shortfall would be covered by a 10% reduction to building operational costs for a total of $4.2 million in cuts. No employees have received termination notices yet. The budget cut proposal will be discussed at the upcoming school board meeting January 27th. For YPR News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. U.S. senators yesterday were sworn in as jurors in the upcoming impeachment trial of President Donald Trump.
Mr. Crapo, Mr. Cruz, Mr. Daines, Ms. Duckworth.
Montana's senators are split along party lines heading into the trial, which is expected to begin next week. In a pre-recorded statement sent to news media outlets, Republican Steve Daines, who's up for re-election next year, said,
"The president was treated very unfairly in the U.S. House. He will receive fair treatment in the U.S. Senate. And I'm very confident the president will be acquitted when this is all said and done by the U.S. Senate."
Democrat John Tester wrote he hopes his colleagues, quote, "on both sides of the aisle will do what the American people expect and allow us to hear from witnesses with firsthand knowledge of the impeachable offenses, so we can do our sworn duty as jurors and deliver a fair and honest trial," end quote. Yesterday, the U.S. Government Accountability Office released a report saying Trump broke the law in freezing Ukraine funds passed by Congress. That's the central question of the current impeachment proceedings. A Tester spokesperson wrote, "Tester is aware of the report and believes it furthers the need for testimony from witnesses with firsthand knowledge and for all documents to be presented at the trial." A spokesperson for Daines wrote, "Daines believes this is another example that the House rushed the process, that the executive branch disagrees with the watchdog's legal analysis, and the point is moot because the aid was ultimately released." An organization that runs warming centers for people experiencing homelessness in Bozeman and Livingston says it needs thousands of dollars in community donations, or they may have to close their doors during winter. Montana Public Radio's Kevin Trevlin reports.
Bozeman's Human Resource Development Council says its warming center, split between two properties, needs $200,000 to stay open through March. HRDC Housing Director Sherry Esslinger says the facility provides 50 to 55 people a place to sleep each night.
"We're just trying to make sure that none of our neighbors die because they don't have any other place to go in the evenings. So we want to provide that warm, safe place for folks."
Esslinger says many warming center guests work one or multiple jobs, but still don't make enough to secure stable housing. The warming center is funded solely by community donations, as is a similar shelter in Livingston. HRDC says it needs $34,000 to keep the Livingston Warming Center open through March. Esslinger says 2 to 5 people use the space each night. She says the 22 individuals who have stayed at the shelter this winter didn't have anywhere else to go in town.
"There is no other options in that community currently. There's no other shelters. Bozeman is the closest shelter, but having folks go through that pass in the winter just so they have a place to rest their head and not freeze to death is also pretty risky as well."
Temperatures have been relatively average in the 30s in the Gallatin Valley the last few days, but another part of the state with a need for shelter space is getting slammed with frigid weather. Bob Honisch with the National Weather Service says wind chill temperatures around the Fort Peck Indian Reservation have fallen to minus 40 degrees the last few days. The Great Falls Tribune reports the reservation's only two homeless shelters have been closed for months due to methamphetamine contamination. Kevin Trevelin, Montana Public Radio.
It's been a cold and snowy week for much of Montana, making it necessary for schools to change their routine. Kay Erickson reports.
It's minus 3 degrees with a wind chill of minus 20 on the corner of Colton Boulevard and 19th Street West in Billings.
You know, it's exhilarating for me. It gives me an excuse to get up early. It kind of takes your breath away when you first step out in it. It's really, really cold today.
That's Evelyn Howard, a school crossing guard for Rose Park Elementary. Howard says lots of layers is her secret to keeping kids safe on cold weather days. When it's that cold, many schools urge parents to remain with students as they wait for the bus or transport them to school, or if they must walk, to bundle up. Schools in Montana set their own guidelines for how to treat cold weather days.
So we have a policy in place that, inclusive of the wind chill, if we are ever below 0 degrees, our students aren't outside.
That's Nathan Schmitz, superintendent for Elder Grove School District, southwest of Billings. Their 0 degree threshold is one that most schools follow, as is their policy of when to take a snow day.
So we make that decision with a great deal of care. There is the reality that in many cases, the school is a very good place for students to be, even on very cold days.
For some students, school is a place where they'll get breakfast, lunch, and a warm place to stay. Schmitz continues.
But the threshold we look at there is safety via transportation. If the roads are not safe to be transporting across, then we do close school.
Schmidt says the last couple of years, Elder Grove has had to take two snow days. The state education department just allows one day per year. Any more than that, and the days have to be made up. Many school districts like Elder Grove are starting to include snow days in their calendars.
But I don't think that these winters are going to be getting any easier, and I hope that we all learn from the recent winters and plan accordingly moving forward, because it is a new reality that we may see winters like this for some time to come.
For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kay Erickson.
Groups across Montana are hosting sermons and talks this weekend in honor of civil rights champion Martin Luther King Jr. Nikki Ouellette caught up with event organizers in Billings.
King's legacy stands on his radical protest against systems of oppression, namely the Jim Crow laws that upheld power for some and excluded others on the basis of skin color. Mindy Driscoll says 60 years later, systems drawn on racial lines are still at play in Montana. As a lawyer, she sees failures in the justice system due to boundaries of tribal, state, and federal jurisdiction.
I, as a white person, could go up the road to the Crow Indian Reservation. I could pull out a gun and go just right in the middle of the street with 100 witnesses. I could shoot an Indian on the reservation. And I would not be triable in the community's court system. It leaves people feeling completely powerless if they can't even protect their own communities through their court system, the system that's supposed to be there for people to redress wrongs.
Driscoll is a board member of Not in Our Town, which, in partnership with Billings First Congregational Church, is hosting the event Everybody Against Injustice, Beyond Militarism, Extreme Materialism, and Racism. That's this Sunday at 3 p.m.
Can we just state as a baseline, everybody's against injustice. That's where they start from.
Pastor Mike Mulberry says to get beyond injustice, we need to investigate the underlying laws and institutions that lead to disproportionate rates of substance abuse, incarceration, and homelessness for Native Americans.
Everybody versus injustice can be something that all of Billings signs on to, believing that nobody wants to see the suffering that is going on in the Billings streets. And it's time, it's overdue, and it's time for us to, with an act of will, bring about change and transformation.
Mulberry says his sermon will draw from King's Beyond Vietnam speech given in 1967, in which King merged his crusade for civil rights at home with calls to end the war in Vietnam.
It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Holland.
Beyond Vietnam was initially criticized as an oversimplification and conflation of the equally weighty but separate issues of civil rights and foreign policy, though it's now celebrated as one of King's most unrestrained and prophetic talks. This weekend, churches, universities, and groups in Billings, Bozeman, Missoula, Whitefish, Great Falls, and elsewhere in the state will host celebrations, sermons, days of service, and bell ringings in honor of King. In Billings, I'm Nikki Ouellette for Yellowstone Public Radio News.
We're now going to share another kind of story from voices you might not hear otherwise. I Sat Down With is a series from the University of Montana Journalism School and is reported, written, and produced by students. Student Emily Simonson recently sat down with her mom to talk about how she didn't actually want to be a mom until she did, three times.
My name is Emily Simonson, and I interviewed my mom, Sherry Simonson, in Missoula, Montana. My mom sat down to talk to me about the day that changed her life.
June 8, 1996. It was about 12:05 when I gave birth to my first child.
So you didn't want to have kids when you first married Dad?
I did not want to have children. I was an only child from a dysfunctional family, just to never anticipate I would be a good parent. Thought I it would be the easier answer just to not have any kids. But my husband said that if I didn't have children, that he would have to move on. So we were having children, whether I wanted to or not, but it took him about 6 years to convince me to have children. By that time, I was 25 years old and ready for that next phase. And I always grew up with my mom, who I'm an only child. So she always told me that there was nothing better than this love you feel for this little person. And I always just thought she was full of shit. Because I never anticipated ever having children. And to have this little person that I was responsible for was scary and exciting all at the same time. And I knew that with having this little person that I wanted to be something better than I was. So it inspired me to be involved. And so I was one of those soccer moms. I was involved in everything. And one of my children told me that everything that they were involved in, I was a part of, from scouting to sports to band. I was that volunteer in the classroom a time or two to being a homeschooling mom. That was me.
You've been listening to Sherry Simonson, a mother of three. In Missoula, Montana, I'm Emily Simonson.
That was University of Montana student Emily Simonson for the UM Journalism School's I Sat Down With series. Last week, Glacier National Park announced it will be changing signs, warning that its signature glaciers would disappear by 2020. The park says the signs, put in more than a decade ago, were based on the best available predictions at the time. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton spoke with Caitlin Florentine, a research physical scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey's Northern Rocky Mountain Science Center, about what's changed.
Caitlin, thanks for joining us on MTPR. And I want to start with the news from last week. Glacier National Park is replacing signage saying the park's glaciers would be gone by 2020. Obviously, you know, it's 2020 and glaciers are still there. Why didn't it exactly pan out?
In 2003, a study was published that considered how the landscape would change, both in terms of glacier evolution as well as vegetation change. And that 2003 study showed that one of the glaciers in Glacier National Park would entirely disappear by 2030. And then as time went on, more observations unique to Glacier National Park were collected. So more measurements were made, you know, more scientists started to scrutinize and, as I mentioned, make more observations.
How many glaciers are in the park today, and do we know historically how many there were?
Yes, so 147 about the mid-20th century. And then today there are 26 named glaciers in the park.
What type of information is going into predictions about when a glacier might melt? What goes into a prediction like that?
You're going to need information about the existing ice volume. So again, not only the footprint of the glacier, but the ice thickness. You also need information about how the glacier flows. You might want to know something about not just the snow falling from the sky and how warm the ambient temperatures are in the summer, that climate information. You might also want some information about avalanching and the wind drifting of snow. These are the sorts of considerations that would go into a physical treatment of when a glacier disappears by. And again, when this problem was first looked at for Glacier National Park, it was a geospatial model that wasn't as sort of anchored in with observations with that information about ice thickness, etc. To run the physical model, you really need to know how much ice is there to begin with.
I mean, how should the average person be thinking about predictions on climate change, like when glaciers melt? I mean, is it fair to have this expectation that it's going to be correct most of the time, when in fact it's a prediction based on the best available science and data that you guys can get a hold of?
Yeah, absolutely. When a prediction is based on the best available science, then I think it is, I mean, that's a, well, even then it's a personal call, right? Where you put your faith. But you know, I think also the level of scrutiny and faith is going to vary whether you're somebody walking through a visitor center in a national park versus whether you're, you know, the mayor of Miami making decisions about how the city is run and how city planning happens, or if you're a congressperson deciding how money will be allocated based on some other, you know, consideration of where water mass is located. But I can tell you with a straight face and with confidence that there is, the people that I interact with professionally are earnestly dedicated to using science to connect, both expose and connect all of us to, you know, as capital T truth as we can get. And it's an imperfect process, but the whole process of peer review is that things are honestly poked and prodded and analyzed many different ways, and still seems to be true. That's the information to be trusted.
And what is the latest and I guess greatest in terms of predicting when we might see some of the major glaciers in the park melt?
In terms of the predictions, the latest that I've seen actually comes from that group of Swiss researchers. So I would have to look at their results in more detail than is possible from looking at the paper they published to be able to say definitively when all the glaciers are hosed and no longer present, but certainly by 2100.
And that's Caitlin Florentine, who is a research physical scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey's Northern Rocky Mountain Science Center. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Tuesday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.